Good morning. It's good to see all the folks here at Hillcrest. I had someone ask if my wife was with me today, and I just want to tell you what the deal was. She would love to be here with us, but my two grandsons just moved to town about 4 weeks ago. So needless to say, she is with them at Southern Hills Church of Christ, and she chose not to come and listen to me. So that's just how that goes, and that's okay. We have a society that seems to be pretty enamored. If you watch any of these do-it-yourself networks, you see people who want to take things that are old and reclaim them and bring them back to either the original luster and glow, or they just want to use them and make something that was useless that someone else threw out, make it valuable and beautiful again. And one of the things that I have noticed, my wife is really, she loves to watch those shows. And then she thinks herself very adept at this, as we will drive past a trash pile and she'll look out and say, oh, look at that, stop the car. And she will go out and dig through some trash and bring it back to my car. And in her mind, she is pretty convinced. She knows exactly what it will look like when I am done finishing that piece. In fact, if you go to my garage right now, inside my garage is a door. Is a door that she saw as we drove past a construction site, and she said, look at that. And I looked at it and went, that's a bunch of trash. She says, no, look at that door. And she went out there, and sure enough, it was a door that had horrible wood all around, some beautiful glass. It's beveled, leaded glass. And she said, come here, I can't lift it. Sure enough, because it's leaded glass, it is heavy. And we hefted that thing into the back of the car. Someone else had thrown away, took it back to the garage where it awaits my beautiful touch to start sanding it down. But I would never have seen it, but she did. And she wanted to take what someone considered useless and make it useful again. Some have even said that her biggest reclamation project is me. And she's been working on me for 34 years, and it's a big project. But she loves that stuff. And the story we're going to look at today is basically a reclamation project. Instead of reclaiming lumber, we're going to look at someone who reclaimed lives. Now, the story starts, and we're going to enter into the text in which we see a crowd scene. And crowd scenes are interesting in that a lot of people, in this story, there was someone who was hiding in the crowd. There was someone who didn't want to be seen. They wanted to remain anonymous. They didn't want to be seen as a treasure, yet they were. Because someone looked out and saw a treasure among the trash. And sometimes, even in church, we sometimes find that we can hide inside crowds like this. I've been in church all my life. My dad was a preacher in Dallas for years and years and years. And so I grew up inside church buildings. And there's one thing I noticed is that people can hide even inside churches. I don't know, I've already met some of the people out here in the foyer from the lovely Hillcrest family. And you know what I found out about them? Every one of the people in the foyer were all fine. Every one of them. How you doing? Fine. Doing fine. And I've met some of the similar ones over at my place at Southern Hills, and I asked them, how you doing? We're fine. But I've been in ministry long enough to know that not everybody in that foyer is fine. Some of you walked in here today with some things that were not so fine. Some of you got a word from a doctor this week that things were not fine. Some of you may have children like I had not too long ago that were walking away from the Lord, had lots of problems. And you came inside this building and you hid. In fact, for several years, I had a child that was wandering away, I would sit inside this building, a building just like this over at Southern Hills, and they would turn the lights down low during the invitation song, And I was so thankful because I could cry and grieve over my young child who was walking away. And I could hide. And luckily she came back and came back in a great way and is doing fantastic. But during those years, I was hiding inside the crowd. Some of you may say, well, I'm too young. You may be one of the teenagers that's going through that time in which you are having your doubts about God Himself, but you're so scared to ask that question, do you really believe there is a God? So you hide in the crowd. And there's some older folks here that I would dare say are thinking, I'm old. I don't have anything to offer anymore at this church. And you have this anxiety of, is there any reason why my life counts? And you hide. And it all works because you can go in and out of this place and not share that with anybody. But I want you to know that Jesus called people out of the crowds. Jesus had some spectacular moments with great crowds, but I'm going to tell you the highlight was the moment in which He called each of us individually. The story we're going to talk about has many facets, but we're going to focus in on one woman. And that is this text in Mark chapter 5. Most of you know this text, but if you want to turn there, that would be fantastic. The first thing you see right off the bat is a large crowd followed and pressed around Jesus. There was a big event that was about to happen. A man named Jairus, who's another story within this story, has a daughter who's dying, and everyone is rushing to see the great healer do his thing. And as they're walking along, there is a woman, it says. It doesn't call her by name, but Jesus knew her name. It says the woman was there who had been subject to bleeding for 12 long years. She had suffered a great deal under the care of many doctors and had spent all she had. Instead of getting better, she actually grew worse at this point. So as Jesus is walking along, she is just trying to mix in with the crowd. And we know, and you know this already, you probably have heard it many times, she wasn't even supposed to be in the crowd with this bleeding issue. She had been isolated from all the religious community. She wasn't supposed to go to a synagogue or temple. She was not supposed to touch anyone. She was flat not supposed to be in the crowd that was pressing around Jesus that day. But she came because of desperation. And I don't know if you've ever felt that desperation. I certainly have, as I've had those moments in life in which I needed somebody to help me. Well, she felt that. And it says in the next verse, but when she heard about Jesus, she came up behind him in the crowd and touched his cloak because she thought, if I just touch his clothes, I'll be healed. The writer allows us to come inside of her mind and see what she was thinking. Her faith was strong enough, if I just touch him, I don't have to have him talk to me. I don't have to have him necessarily reach out his hand and touch me. I just want to get just a little bit of Jesus. Isn't that just like humanity? I just want to get a little something from him and then walk away. Because that was her plan in the crowd because she was hiding. I don't know how many crowds you've been to. I tend to go to a few things that put me in proximity to big, big crowds. My wife, she's a wonderful lady, but she just loves a bargain. And I don't know if you've had those times right after Christmas, the day after Christmas. They have these Christmas sales, and we'd be in Dallas at my folks' house, and she would go, we've got to go. And I said, when are we going? 6:30 a.m. Oh, you're kidding me. And you know what was the day before Christmas was worth $300 is now only going to be $3. Okay? And we go to a big mall in Dallas, and there we are outside this big, huge mall, and lo and behold, there are thousands of other people who have come out who have wives just like mine waiting for that bargain. And as it gets to six o'clock, the crowd starts pressing toward the doors. At 6:15, they press a little more. And at 6:25, you feel the crowd just squeezing you. And then the lovely store in Dallas, I won't call it by name, but it starts with a big D and it's a major retailer. They decide to open up one of the 24 panel doors. Oh, no. And I sense it. And the crowd senses it. And everybody knows we've got to go to that one door right over there instead of these 24 other doors. And I literally remember feeling the squeeze of the crowd. And then I just picked up my feet. And they just carried me in like a river into our marvelous bargains. And if someone were to ask me, who touched you? I would go, all of these people. And I didn't like it at all. And yet, this woman chanced to be in that crowd, and it says immediately her bleeding stopped when she reached out and touched him. And she felt in her body that she had been freed from her suffering. And her intent that day was to simply walk away. If Jesus had not stopped this procession, this parade to a healing, we would have had a very different ending to this story. It would have just been she walked away and remained anonymous. I don't know if you've ever had brushes with greatness. To reach out, to be able to touch someone who's very, very important in your world. I was getting on an airplane going out to California one day, and I like to get on the plane last. And so as I'm boarding in Dallas and I'm about to head out to L.A., The flight clerk there looks over and she's about to take my ticket and all of a sudden she goes, oh, and her mouth literally drops. And I think, oh no, she recognized me, Robert Oglesby. Yes, I am Robert Oglesby. And then I realize she's looking up above me and I'm thinking, well, man, there's something, someone really big is back behind me. So I casually just kind of looked back and went, okay. No, that's not who I thought it was. And so I took a second look. And I looked again, once again, very casual, very cool. And standing right behind me was this guy. Now, he wasn't in the boxer shorts there. But it was Muhammad Ali, was standing right beside me. You know, and his wife was right beside him. And so I think, I can't act like one of these crazy people that doesn't see Muhammad Ali all the time, so I'm just going to keep walking. And somebody stopped him. The very last person on the plane stops Muhammad to ask for an autograph. So I start walking down. His wife comes down with me, and I said, I bet you get stopped in airports a lot. And she says, yeah. But she said, you know, the champ loves it. And I said, I'll be right back. And I went back and got his autograph for my son. Of course, it wasn't for me. It was my son. And I had a wonderful conversation. He pulls out this tract that says, what is Islam? And I don't know, some of you older people know. So I whipped out my tract, why am I a member of the Church of Christ? And I gave it to him. And you know, I started sparring with him there in the airport. You know, he used to do that float like a butterfly, sting like a bee. So I did my version of it. And I said, float like a butterfly, sting like a bee. I teach about the greatest. My name's Oglesby. And I'll tell you something. It was neat. It was great. His hand wrapped around mine twice. I gripped with the hardest grip I could get and took him right to his knees. It was awesome. But you know what? He didn't change my life at all. Did nothing for me. I've got a great autograph. I got a great story. It was neat. It's a wonderful memory. But the bottom line is Muhammad Ali did not change my life. Jesus Christ did. And Jesus, in this story, changed this woman's life. Not just a physical change, though. It was much more than that. Let's keep reading. At once Jesus realized that power had gone out of him, which is interesting. I never thought about it maybe costing him some energy or some recognition of someone draining something from his touch. But bottom line is, it says something happened within Jesus himself. And he turned around to the crowd and asked, who touched my clothes? And we love to just read on through this and say, you see the people crowding around you, his disciples answered, yet you ask, who touched me? But Jesus kept looking around. See this as a movie. See this as that moment where you have this crowd of people around him and they're all touching him, and all of a sudden he says, who touched me? And then he stops and he looks through the crowd. And the scripture, I know we could read on and keep going, but just imagine him looking through that crowd saying, who was it? Who was it? Until finally it says that she came out. She revealed herself. She had intended to stay invisible. She intended to be that little piece of trash that had been excluded from society, who had been pushed out of her church community, who had been alone forever. She was used to that. Yet she sat there and came out of the crowd. She lost being invisible. You know, we have societies in our society, people who are invisible to us many times. I was up in Denver, Colorado, not long ago, about 3 weeks ago, and I got to go and sit in and watch Matt Wallace, who works with homeless teenagers in Denver, Colorado. And one of the things Matt taught me about working with homeless teenagers is most people, as they walk past the people who are panhandling and all that on the street, you never make eye contact. And he says that is so insulting to those that are homeless because they are seen as invisible, that they're not really people. They're not cared for. They are trash. The trash of humanity. So he taught me the simple lesson of look into their eyes. Even if you don't give them money, if you say that they're going to waste it on something, at least look into their eyes and treat them as real people. And so I've tried to do that more and more, and it's challenged me and pushed me to say every person counts. They don't look like me. They don't smell like me. They may have very little education, but bottom line is, in the world that Jesus walked in, everybody counted. And in this situation, she felt like she had been invisible for a very long time. So as they would walk through this particular crowd scene, the following thing happens. Then the woman, knowing what had happened to her, came and fell at his feet, and trembling with fear, told him the whole truth. She told him her story. And he said to her this beautiful thing. Calls her daughter. It's the only woman in the entire Bible that Jesus calls daughter. And when I say daughter, I'm talking about someone whom I love. And Jesus calls this woman daughter. Your faith has healed you. Go in peace and be freed from your suffering. And we would like to say, well, it's all about the physical stuff. That's all she cared about. But Jesus has this way of always giving you a little more. There was a bigger suffering. There was a suffering of isolation. There was a suffering of I couldn't be with the people I wanted to be with. There was a suffering that said I can't even worship like I would like to worship. Yet he said, be freed from all that. It's good now. And I hope you will find peace in this. But you see the tenderness of Jesus Christ. You see him reaching out to someone who has not been touched in years. For 12 long years, she has suffered. And all of a sudden, in one meeting, her life has changed. That's the beautiful thing about Jesus. He's about to raise a little girl from the dead. He's constantly showing up at places, and things happen when Jesus shows up. And in this case, this casual meeting becomes a significant thing for this woman. What can we take from this story? Several things. I want you to know Jesus still touches people in crowds. If you're hiding in this crowd today, I want you to know Jesus cares about whatever problem you walked into this auditorium with. You may have said fine in the foyer, but I want you to know Jesus says, I care about what you are struggling with right now. And He wants you to know that. That's why this story is here. There is nothing too insignificant for Jesus. If it's heavy on your heart, it's heavy on His. And He wants you to find an answer for that. He doesn't want it to be a secret. He's ready for you to interrupt Him. He's ready to stop whatever He is doing right now and see you as an individual. That's the great thing. Jesus doesn't call the crowds to Him. He calls individuals over and over and over. And to use a Church Hill crest, I've got to tell you, you need to be the hands of Jesus. If we're going to truly reflect His nature, then we need to start being His hands. We got to look for the hidden treasures around us. They may look like trash. It may be a situation that you think, this is hopeless. But with Jesus working through you, there are some incredible miracles that can happen. Some of you may think you're not treasures because you're too young. I've got a story for you. I want to show you a young man that we thought might not be a treasure. His name was Glenn. Glenn was part of my youth group. And when Glenn was growing up, Glenn was one of those teenagers that, let's just say he was extra energetic and not always for good. Glenn was the one that, he would always tend to cause trouble. He was always the disciplined problem in class. He was too loud. He talked too much. And of course, as all tough kids in youth ministry, always showed up for every youth group function. Never missed. So Glenn was always a part of my youth group. And as Glenn would grow up, he finally started driving. And Glenn loved to drive fast. And unfortunately, he would run into things driving fast. And he would mud and he'd get his truck stuck and all that stuff. And it became very clear very quickly for all the parents out there. They would tell their kids, you can ride with anyone to the Devo except for Glenn. Because they were afraid how fast he drove. And they were right. And we would go on retreats and mission trips and all that stuff. And invariably, Glenn would hurt somebody in our youth group. I wound up at the emergency room many times and I'd hear this story. Well, Glenn was hitting me with a pillow and it ran my head into the sharp corner and that's why I would need stitches. And could you come down here and get my medical stuff? And I'd go, Glenn's at it again. And he hurt people and he got in trouble. And I kept thinking, Lord, what have I done wrong to have this kid in my youth group? But I kept trying to believe in him and kept trying to tell him God had something great in store for him. Well, Glenn kept growing up. He didn't get much better the older he got, maybe a little bit. His mother sent me a picture, 8x10. And she said, you were one of those people that never gave up on him, that believed God could do something great with my son. And so I wanted you to have this. So this is what I pulled out of the envelope that day from Glenn's mother. Yeah, he turned into a cop. They gave Glenn a gun. A gun! Then I started thinking about it. This job is perfect. It's perfect. Glenn loves to drive fast. He's had years and years of practice driving fast, and now he can do it legally. Awesome. Number two, Glenn never got hurt himself. He hurt all those that were around him. So all the bad guys need to be put on notice. Glenn is in your part of the town, and he has a gun. And y'all are going to get hurt. Because there were little angels, I'm convinced, that were taking care of Glenn throughout this deal. It came time for assignments. Where are you going to be a cop in Dallas? And all the other guys were trying to get those nice little sweet areas around Dallas and little bedroom communities of Dallas. And Glenn said, I want to go to the toughest parts of town. That's going to be my ministry. And he'd come home from some of his exploits and he'd say, Robert, worked with this family the other day. Mom and dad breaking up, and I got to talk to those kids a little bit about what their parents were going through and tried to help them. So that's good, Glenn. That's good. And he'd talk about some other situations in which he got to be the hands of Jesus with people who you and I might not even talk to, but Glenn wanted to be there because Jesus had touched his life in significant ways, and he wanted to share that with others. Some of you may be older and say, well, I can't do very much. And I would tell you, the Lord continues to do some great things. The Lord's going to continue to give you opportunities if you'll look for them. You have to look through some crowds at times. There's a lady from our church named Pat, and Pat was over here at the Walmart on this side of town and saw a lady from Nepal, kind of distraught and couldn't find things and obviously did not speak very good English at the time. She had just come to Abilene, Texas. And Pat did something that was not like her, but said, would you like me to take you to your house? And the lady said, oh, that would be wonderful. And so Pat went with her to her house. And all of a sudden, she saw this whole community that had been dropped here in Abilene, Texas, all refugees from a country that did not want them anymore. They were people who had been put on a trash heap, basically, and said, you don't belong here in this country, and we're going to dump you in Abilene, Texas. And Pat saw all these people, and she said, would you like to go to church with me? And what started out as one lady turned into 5, turned into 10, turned into 20, turned into 30, turned into about 45 to 50 folks from Nepal that now attend at our church across town. And many of them are now your brothers and sisters in Christ. Because Pat was one of those people who said, I'm going to try to see through a crowded mall at Walmart a treasure. Someone who needs Jesus Christ. And she followed that so well. What are we after? And this, a big question. Who's been invisible or useless to you? Who do you think, they're you know, people and all, but I just don't want to get involved. I just don't want to be that person that's going to invest that much time. Because I'll tell you, reclamation projects take some time sometimes. It's not just quickly. Who's been that invisible person in your world? Who have you considered, they don't need to come to church. They wouldn't be interested. It's time to start looking. It's time to start asking that question. And most importantly, the question is, will you stop and be like Jesus for them this week? Think through who that is. It was interesting, as I was preparing for this week and thinking about this message to share with you, I began praying a prayer, and that prayer was, help me to see somebody who I need to recognize, who I need to speak to. And lo and behold, I had a plumbing problem at one of my houses. I have a rent house here nearby. And a guy who's been my plumber for years and years and years came up and fixed it. And we're just kind of wrapping up the conversation. We were all business. You know, here's what it, how much it costs. Here's your check. See you next time. And then he made this offhanded comment, which didn't even fit with the conversation, but he said, my wife and I are separating this week. Oh man, I am sorry about that. And I said, tell me what happened. And we spent about 30 or 40 minutes just talking about his life and how tough it had been and how his wife was coming the next day to pack things up so she'd be completely out of the house. And as we talked and as we shared, I realized, Lord, is this the person? He's just a plumber to me. But we became friends, partners. And I actually was able to see him. He had forgotten to pick up a tool, and so he came back to the house about 3 days later. And as I finished up with him and said, "Thanks very much for dropping by," and all, I asked him again, "Tell me how it's going." And we spent another 30 minutes. And I realized there was so much more in there. You can just tell he wants to share it with somebody. But the best words I heard were, "Thanks for listening. Thanks for caring." As I tried to be that Jesus to him. I don't know if it changed his life or not, but it changed his day, made it better. And I hope that you will think through the people who, once again, may not be evident right now, but they might be this week as you walk amongst the crowds that you'll see. Let's pray. Father, I thank you for this time. I thank you for this good church to be able to share, to be able to give this message, because it's been working on me this week, and I pray it will work on them this week as well. I pray that you will help us as we continue to try to be your people, to be your hands, to be your feet, and most importantly, to see people like you see them. I know there's a lot of good people here, but I know there are also some hurting people in this church. Help us, Father, to be sensitive, to have the heart and the eyes of you. We pray all these things together in your precious name. Amen. We always invite anyone that needs help, needs prayers, wants to make the good confession to come and share with us as we stand and as we sing.